Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. That's the name of this show on the American Family Radio Network. 24 and a half more minutes of program left here on this show, but we hope you listen to AFR throughout the day. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano, and Steve Paisley-Jordahl joins us now. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody. How y'all doing?
Hey, we have a very special guest you brought in studio.
I figured if you're going to have one of your relatives on,
yeah,
because he's going to be joining us, I'm going to bring one of mine.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
Today is my dad, Richard Jordahl's 90th birthday, Dick Jordahl.
Yeah.
90 years old. And so we brought him in, and we're going to talk to him. You wanted to talk to him.
I did.
You got a question for him, but I want to start, if you don't mind, by asking him, can you explain to everybody why you like me better than my sister?
That isn't even worth commenting on. I've spent 9 years trying to answer questions like that. I still haven't succeeded.
And your sister, Steve's named Carol.
Her name is Carol, yeah.
Is she listening?
I doubt it.
Okay.
Where does she live? Send her the interview. Where
I know, right? Live? She's in Nashville. Dad actually lives with in an apartment attached to her
ADU,
house.
So.
How far were you from the tornado?
We're south.
Okay, you're
the
south.
The tornado was north.
Got to Franklin area, kind of area? Okay.
We were.
Well, listen, thanks for joining us. So, 90 years old.
That's right.
So you were born in what year?
1933, December 11th.
So you have memories of World War II then? Obviously.
Yes, I certainly do.
Where were you living then?
I was living in a little town in eastern Oregon, La Grande, Oregon, and remember vividly growing up at that time, rationing. I wore out shoes, and my mom had to go before a board to get permission to buy me another pair of shoes. Sugar you couldn't get. It was a fascinating time, and as a kid, I didn't know anything but war news. And I asked my mom, I said, Mom, what's going to happen when the war is over? What are they going to put in newspapers?
Right.
I didn't know.
Well, because they had the newsreels, too, would play if you went to the movie theater.
Yeah.
Because there was no nightly news. There was no television.
No, totally different.
Right.
But it was a real threat. You really believed you were going to be taken over. And it was scary.
So you were living in a small town in eastern Oregon?
Right.
One of the towns that wants to be Idaho now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's really remote.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, especially at that time. That's what was your, when you grew up, and when did you become a pastor?
Well, I felt God talking to me about it when I was a sophomore in high school. And make a long story short, God touched me, moved me, and I prepared for the ministry and started really in 1956 was when I really started in the ministry. And then in 1960, I went to Twin Lakes Church in Santa Cruz, California, and was there for 41 years with a parenthesis of 7 years when we were in Madagascar.
So 1960, you went to what was the name of the church?
Twin Lakes Church.
Where's that?
Santa Cruz, Aptos, California, right next to Santa Cruz.
Yep.
You remember that, Steve?
Oh, yeah. I grew up in that church, and that's where when we came back from the mission field, that's where I went to church during high school and college and until we moved every time I was in California until just like a couple of years ago. So yeah, very familiar with the church. Love that church. Beautiful church.
So tell me the time so you're pastoring a church, this Twin Lakes church. And then
I was an associate pastor.
Associate.
And
that's when everything gets dumped in your lap, right?
Pardon?
That's when the senior pastor dumps everything in your lap.
Right.
Listen, right. We had the nicest church in the world. People were tremendous to us, and they gave us trust. And I would say the median tenure of people on our staff at Twin Lakes now is 30 years.
Talking to Dick Jordahl, who's in studio with us. He's the father of Steve Jordahl. Dick lives in the Nashville area. He's down visiting with Steve, and we asked him to come in studio because he's celebrating 90 years on this planet. And I wanted to ask you about the time. Okay, so you're in Northern California serving the church.
Right.
What year was it, and how did it come about that you decided God wanted you to go to Madagascar?
Well, good question. We came to Santa Cruz in 1960, and I was working in education in the church, just pretty much do it. You answered the question earlier, did everything.
Right.
But we were challenging young people to consider going to the mission field, and so we got convicted that maybe we needed to see if God wanted us there. So we made application with what was the mission agency at the time, Conservative Baptist Foreign Missionary Society. And we got convicted because we'd been living on our street for 7 years, and we hadn't seen anybody come to know the Lord. And here we were traveling 12,000 miles to talk to other people about Jesus, and it hadn't happened on our block. Right. So one night we just prayed. We said, God, do anything you want to do to see us bring our neighbors to come to know Christ. We prayed that prayer one night.
Be careful what you pray for, right?
What?
Be careful what you pray for.
Well, yeah. From our standpoint, it was a good thing. But from God's standpoint, it was right. The next day, my Carol, the one I love more than him. not really.
Yeah, I know.
Ran out of my arms into the middle of the street and was hit and knocked into a coma and lying in the street.
By a car.
Just by a car. We didn't know whether she's going to die right
there.
What
age?
She's four. And I remembered what we prayed. And the entire neighborhood came out of their house. And there I was. And so the Lord gave me the ability to get down on my knees, and we just committed her to the Lord before all of those people. And God was good, obviously, because she recovered, but it was tough. But our neighbors across the street came to know Christ through that process.
Wow.
So that's the beginning. And then the Lord sent us through Madagascar, which was a tremendously wonderful experience.
Okay, so what age were you, Steve, when y'all went?
Well, I was 68. I was 8 years old.
What I want to know is, why Madagascar? I mean, were you given two or three choices where your family could go on the foreign mission field, and you closed your eyes and went around the globe? And
right.
I mean, how did that pin something down? How'd that work?
Well, we were initially planning on going to France.
Okay.
But we received an invitation from a man that was wanting to open up a new field in Madagascar. And there was an association of churches there, 12 small churches, and they wanted some people to come and help them establish a theological education by extension. It's where you take the training to the pastors, because your leaders are the adults that can't afford to go to school, but they're the ones. So our job was to take the training to them. So that's what we went. They requested, would you be willing to come? And so we said, sure. We prayed about it and felt like maybe our gifts would fit that area. So that's what we did.
So Madagascar, that's an island off Africa.
That's right.
So are they
world's third largest island?
Fourth.
Fourth?
Yeah. Fourth largest island.
Oh, there you go.
One of them shrunk.
He's always correcting
me. Geographically.
The disgusting thing is
he's Guam, and
right.
It Guam, and it tipped over when we had too many troops on there. Madagascar took this place.
Right.
So how many years in Madagascar then?
We were 7 years. We were planning on spending the rest of our life, but God closed the door and sent us back to the church where we came from.
7 years, one in France and in Switzerland.
We were in France.
Learning language, yeah.
We were in France to learn French, because everybody's bilingual in Madagascar. And then,
what are their languages?
Malagasy is the other universal language on the island. And so you're looking at one of the world's worst language learners. If there was a mistake to be made in learning language, I did it.
Okay.
and so.
Tell us about your ministry there, though. I mean, I want to know how many did you how did you get people there? I'm guessing these folks are a lot of the Africans are superstitious. They're pagan religions. They're that kind of thing. Idol worshiping. That's the image.
They're ancestor worship.
Ancestor worship.
One of the things they do is they spend more money on their tombs and their where they place their dead than where they live, because as much as they can afford it, they will go down and they will wrap the bodies in linen, and then every so once in a while they'll go back and they'll bring the bodies back up out of the grave, rewrap them, and carry them around the community and have a celebration and a parade, and then rewrap them and put them back. But they really, ancestor worship is...
So what kind of success did you have there?
Well,
success is a relative word here. I understand that. Yeah, I understand. I mean, how were you able to penetrate?
What my job was, I prepared and went down to a teaching point where I taught theology and Bible in the Malagasy language to these pastors and a lot of church members also who wanted to learn. And the interesting thing was I was able to have great conversations. We had discussions, Socratic method, all that sort of stuff. And so I felt pretty good about my language. And then I would come home and a woman would knock on the door selling brushes, and I didn't know the first word about brush. So the basic issue is this: God gave me the ability to do something I probably shouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
Yeah. Tell them about how many churches were in the association.
Oh,
before?
There were 12 churches, and these churches invited us to come. And there were 5 families that showed up. And that was really overwhelming to this small little association of churches. One couple stayed for 30 years.
A missionary couple.
That came with us. We were opening that field. This couple stayed and ran home small Bible studies, and they've probably established around 200 to 300 churches now. One couple.
Wow.
And the association has grown from that small group to thousands of people, and the Lord is still using that ministry, which is exciting to me think that the Lord would even give me even a small chance of just having a small part of that.
Amen. Well, listen, what a wonderful career you've had as far as serving God, both here in the U.S. and in Madagascar, and 90 years young, huh?
I guess.
I would like to just say before we let you go, I see on the bio that we were handed that your wife, you and your wife Marilyn, had been married for 64 years till her 66. Passing. 66, okay.
Yeah.
Until her passing in 2022. I want to say that you and Miss Marilyn did a great job raising Steve.
Thank you.
I've never met Carol. I'm sure she is superior to Steve.
In many ways.
You did a great job with Steve. He loves the Lord, and he's very diligent about his job. We're blessed to have him here. So,
did he get his love for Paisley from you?
No, I just check for me. That's
You're a check guy. Checkerboard. Checkerboard.
Our kids have never caused us one moment of real grief. Problems
that he knows about.
they were able to cover it well.
Yes, that's what you learn. Someone told me a long time ago that your job is to find out what your teenagers are doing. your teenager's job is to hide it from you. So that's the back and forth that goes with kids grow up.
One quick story. When I was in college, I had some friends from, I went to Biola. I had some friends up for Thanksgiving who lived farther away than I did. So they all came to my house. And we decided to go up to San Francisco for the night, or for the evening to go. And we went, there was a nice restaurant up at the top of the Mark Hopkins Hotel that rotated. You can see the whole city. And we went there. We thought we were very, you know, sophisticated. And so we decided to have virgin daiquiris, which are daiquiris without alcohol,
right,
just the ice and everything, because we didn't drink and everything. So we had our good night, and then we came home, and as we came home, and you know, how'd your night go, Dad asked. I said, fine. We went to the top of the Mark. We had virgin daiquiris, and oh, it was great. Okay, good night. So 2 days later, after everybody, Dad pulls me aside and says, I have not been able to sleep. He said, I got to tell you, if you want to go into the ministry, you got to learn not to, you can't drink.
So we had interns at the church.
Yeah, I was an intern at the church. I was preparing to go into ministry myself, which I did for several years. He said, you can't drink. I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, you went up to the top of the Mark Hopkins and you said you had daiquiris. I said, we had virgin daiquiris. He says, what's that mean?
Okay, so I'm naive.
Well, what was the first president you remember?
Roosevelt.
FDR.
FDR.
Yeah.
Not the other one.
Teddy. If you remember Teddy, I want to know what vitamins you're taking.
Nope.
Oh, man. But anyway, well, thank you, Mr. Jordahl.
Thank you for allowing me to be here. It's been an honor. Well, and I admire what you do. It's tremendous.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Praise the Lord. Thank you, sir.
Dick Jordahl in studio with us, Steve's dad. He's down from Nashville visiting, and he's 90 years old, and just sharing some of the memories he's had of in the ministry, both here and on the foreign mission field. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano and Steve Jordahl. All right, Steve, as far as news, what do you have first?
Well, we have just been talking to a man who's got a remarkable life and is fairly humble about it. I want to talk about a man who's had a fairly remarkable life and is anything but. Donald Trump has been talking, and he was doing a speech fundraiser for his campaign. And never one to shy away from tooting his own horn, he decided to tout and talk about his bravery. What a brave man he was. And I want you to hear what he said. Listen to cut 10.
But I went onto that stage just a few days later, and a general who's a fantastic general actually said to me, sir, I've been on the battlefield. Men have gone down on my left and on my right. I stood on hills where soldiers were killed. But I believe the bravest thing I've ever seen was the night you went onto that stage with Hillary Clinton after what happened. And then that woman asked you the first question about it. And I said, locker room talk. It's locker room talk. Locker room talk.
That was a Saturday night. Trump was speaking at a New York gala for Young Republicans. I think it was a local chapter of Young Republicans. What he was talking about there,
it's hard to say.
He was bragging about his younger days and his exploits with women.
Well, things that we can't talk about that he was talking about that he had said. He was bragging that he had overcome obstacles in the campaign against Hillary Clinton, one of which was that videotape of him saying things you could do to women. That's all I'm going to say.
Right.
And then he goes on to say that a general told him taking the debate stage was braver, the bravest thing he ever saw, even braver than men losing their lives in battle. And I just thought that seems a little bit over the top, even for Trump. Huh?
Yeah.
Should you be talking like that?
I don't, even if a general did say that, I'm not saying he's lying. I'm saying, but even if a general does say that to you, my personal opinion is you don't ever compare yourself, no matter how brave you are, to men who have given their lives. That's why
I agree.
That's why I have deference to those who have actually served. When we're talking about, I have nephews. I have a brother-in-law. I have two brother-in-laws who have served in the military and two that currently serve. And I always show deference to them when talking about military matters, when we have big family get-togethers. Yeah. These are people who have put it on the line, and I'm not going to compare myself to them. That's just that's my take on it.
I
don't think he should have done that. Find some other way to talk about how brave you are. I killed a snake once. It scared my wife.
Yeah.
Brave. Killed it.
Well,
killed
why don't you let somebody else talk about how brave you are?
Yeah.
Instead of you saying I'm anyway, whatever. Yeah. Next story, Steve.
All right. You guys were talking last hour about the companies that had previously not wanted to mention Christmas, and then one of the companies you said did. Whoever got to that company needs to go out to California, because California just had its tree lighting, Christmas tree lighting. But I want you to hear how much Gavin Newsom decided that he wanted to not mention Christmas. You're going to hear from first partner, Gavin Newsom's wife. Her name is Jennifer Siebel Newsom. And then you're going to hear from Gavin Newsom. And then you're going to hear from our friend Gary Bauer. And then you're going to hear from Ronald Reagan. And then you're going to hear from Gary Bauer again. So this will all make sense. But I want to listen and note how much effort it takes him not to mention Christmas. Cut five.
Season's greetings and happy holidays, California. Welcome to the lighting of the California State Capitol tree.
As we begin this evening, I'd like to read a land acknowledgement. We recognize the treatment through colonialism and attempted genocide of our forebears. It was their persistence, tenacity, and resilience that the descendants of those first people that inhabited this land are still here today. Welcome.
The holidays remind all of us to dedicate our thoughts to others, that mercy and compassion are enduring virtues, and that it is more blessed to give than to receive.
They were idiots. As I watched it, I found myself Googling Ronald Reagan, Christmas, December 1981.
Some celebrate Christmas as the birthday of a great and good philosopher and teacher. Others of us believe in the divinity of the child born in Bethlehem, that he was and is the promised Prince of Peace.
A Gavin administration, if God forbid we ever end up with it, may possibly make us yearn for the Biden years. Biden's an old-style Democrat that has got a bunch of leftists around him, but Gavin Newsom is the real thing.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the shaman that they brought on, the Indian chief that was going to read the land acknowledgement, which is kind of very woke.
Who was it that said it is more blessed to give than
that
to
was,
receive?
That was Gavin Newsom.
That was Gavin Newsom
quoting the Bible,
quoting Jesus.
I don't think he knew that, or he wouldn't have done it. But
did he attribute? Yeah, he didn't attribute.
No, it's a colloquial saying. You know, everybody knows it's better to give than to receive. It's just, yeah.
Well, listen, it's painful. It's painful to listen to these quote-unquote progressives talk all around what they really want to say, which is what Gavin Newsom and first partner, that's painful to say too.
Right.
What he really wants to say is, we hate God, we hate Christianity, we know California has a lot of Christians, so we don't want to upset them, but I'm not going to mention it. This is straight out of Romans 1, a refusal to give honor and glory to God. And it is idolatry, and that's what the book of Romans says.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. My thanks to Ed and Fred and Dick Jordahl.
Jerry Lawson.
And Brent Creeley, our producer.
He's okay, too.
Have a great rest of your afternoon, folks. Keep listening to American Family Radio.